The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sinister of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman. And today I'm joined by just Trey Oldenburg. Nathan Gladwell is out with got his wisdom teeth taken out, so he'll be back next week. So let's jump into AAA. The first story we have today is the Arizona Cardinals have hired Philadelphia Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon to be the team's next head coach. Do you think they made the right hire, Gray?
Yeah, I think this is a good hire. I think the Cardinals are in such an interesting position right now. One of the most interesting positions you could argue because of the third pick that they have, because 31 of their players that were on last year's roster will now become unrestricted free agents, and the blow up of the coaching staff. And you get Jonathan Gannon, who I think is a really good and upcoming young talent, really proved that he could change a defense like the Eagles. He brought the Eagles had the number two defense in the league this year. After 2 years ago, after he took over, they were in the bottom end of the league in terms of total defense. So I think it's a good hire. I'm really interested to see where the Cardinals organization goes after this hire and with the moving forward with their team, with Steve Keim taking a break right now, their general manager, and kind of the position that they're in. I think they have a chance to either really turn it around or really go into a rehaul mode.
Yeah, it feels like nobody wanted the job. You had Sean Payton being a candidate there, took the job in Denver. And then you had Brian Flores, who was the front runner for a long time. And then you took the defensive coordinator position with Minnesota. So it just kind of appeared that nobody really wanted it, just because of maybe Kyler Murray and his attitude and the way he treated Cliff Kingsbury the last time, the last head coach there. I'm not sure I would have gone with Gannon after the second half performance in the Super Bowl. I mean, it looked like that defense was just lost majority of the time, but you can't really ignore the success they had in the regular season. They had 78 sacks, which is third most in a season in NFL history. So, I mean, you really can't ignore that. But the Eagles are going to have to replace both their coordinators now. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. And if Nick Sirianni takes over that play calling role Indianapolis Colts. I'm forgetting here. Drawing a blank.
Sketching.
Is that his name? Shane Steichen.
Left. There you go. Yeah.
So see, they have a lot of holes to fill there, and I wonder if they can repeat what they did this year.
Yeah.
All right, the second story we have today is the Baltimore Ravens have hired Georgia offensive coordinator Todd Monken to the same position, and the Washington Commanders have hired Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy to the same position. What are your thoughts on these hires, Greg?
I think the Monken hire is really interesting to me. Monken is an older guy. He's 57 years old, which isn't crazy old for an NFL offensive coordinator, but he's not. We've seen a lot of these young coaches get hired and to change the offenses. But with Monken's success that he had at Georgia, taking that Georgia offense to averaging 500 yards a game and 40 points a game this past season and back-to-back national championships – with Stetson Bennett at quarterback, that was a pure offensive play calling type of offense with the talent that he had. And him taking over this Ravens offense where they get Lamar Jackson healthy back next year, hopefully if he resigns, you've got these young players, you need to go out, maybe get a wide receiver after you lost Marquise Brown. So I think that's a very interesting one. The Commanders hiring Bieniemy, is that who you say his name?
Yeah.
Bieniemy. That's a fantastic hire for the Commander. Obviously, the Commanders' offense has really, really struggled. But again, a lot like the Ravens, they've got talent. They've got some guys on the offense. Depending on where they go at the quarterback position, you've got guys on that in that receiving room with Dotson and Terry McLaurin. I think it'll be interesting to see where these two offenses go with these two new hires, because they look like they're going in the same direction with going more towards the passing game, obviously. Going and getting a guy from Georgia for the Ravens is really interesting. I think I think they're interesting hires.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised Monken decided to leave Georgia with all that success they've had there. But you know, he's had that success wherever he's gone. He coached the Browns when Baker Mayfield had that awesome season. He coached the Buccaneers in 2018, where they had the NFL's best passing attack. So there's he's obviously good at his job. They must have offered him a lot of money to go to Baltimore, because I don't think I would have left Georgia. It seems more secure, a more secure job there with Kirby Smart. But there were sources saying that Lamar wasn't really involved in this hiring whatsoever, and that Monken wasn't guaranteed Lamar would be there next year. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Ravens have at quarterback, and if Monken's going to have to develop somebody, and if he's going to be okay with doing that. And then for the Commanders, Bieniemy, it's more promotion than anything. He was the offensive coordinator in Kansas City, but he really didn't call the plays with Andy Reid doing so. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does with his first opportunity. He's been passed over a lot of for a lot of jobs. He's been interviewed 16 times with 15 NFL teams, and he's probably been it's been rumored that he's been passed over just because he hasn't been calling the plays in Kansas City. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to have success there and earn one of these head coaching positions that he's been vying for so many years. Gray, looking at Georgia, they replaced Monken with Mike Bobo. You being an Auburn fan, you've had experience with Mike Bobo. So how do you think it's going to go for Georgia fans?
This is laughable as an Auburn fan, but this is an interest. This is the weirdest hire, at least from a college perspective, that I think has happened all off season. Whether you're talking about head coaching, either coordinator position, no matter what. Obviously, hiring from within is something you should definitely consider, especially after winning two straight national championships with Mike Bobo as an offensive analyst on that staff, and with Drew Bobo, his son, coming in as a this is will compete for the starting center job for Georgia this upcoming year, or an offensive guard job. But this, from what I saw at Auburn, the struggles of play calling. If Bobo calls the plays next year for Georgia, Georgia fans are going to be in for a rude awakening going from somebody like Todd Monken, who's one of the top offensive coordinators at the job right now, to somebody like Mike Bobo.
I mean, you did have success in with Matthew Stafford and Aaron Murray, but not knowing what Georgia's quarterback position is going to look like next year is going to be something to worry about, considering Mike Bobo is their offensive coordinator. All right, the third story we have today is two NBA players have reached contract buyouts with their teams. Kevin Love agreed to a contract buyout with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Russell Westbrook agreed to a contract buyout with the Utah Jazz. Love plans to sign with the Miami Heat, while Westbrook plans to sign with the Los Angeles Clippers. What do you think about these signings by the Heat and Clippers?
I think for the Heat and for Kevin Love, obviously Kevin Love was out of the lineup a few weeks before the All-Star break and before the trade deadline for at Cleveland. I just don't think he fit into what Cleveland was going towards and moving towards. And for the Heat, I think he can provide not only the leadership and the kind of old guy mentality in the locker room for a guy like Kevin Love that we all saw from him, even when he was at the Cavs. With Irving and James, but him going to the Heat might be able to get onto the floor, become that corner shooter that he was with Cleveland. But moving to Cleveland's just kind of moving in a different direction right there. I think that's good for both of those the Cavs and for Kevin Love. For Russell Westbrook, the Clippers moved on from Reggie Jackson. They've been struggling with injuries, obviously Kawhi Leonard at the beginning of the season. Paul George has been struggling with injuries a little bit, especially recently. But I love this fit. I don't know why, because I think there's only one basketball on the basketball court in a basketball game. It feels like there needs to be three with these players, with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook. But we saw success. We saw at least some success and some chemistry that Paul George and Russell Westbrook had when they were at Oklahoma City. I think if you tail that in at Los Angeles with a guy like Kawhi Leonard, have some bench pieces like Terrence Mann is a great piece. Zubac's there. Nicholas Batum's there. They've got leadership. They've got pieces. They've got players who have won championships before, like Leonard, and they've got players who can really put the ball in the basket. They've just got to find a way to work it all together, and they can find themselves into the West playoff race.
Yeah, for Kevin Love, it's sad to see him go with the Cleveland Cavaliers, being a key member of that 2016 championship team. The key moment being when he locked up Steph Curry in Game 7. That's always a core memory for me, just reflecting back on that run. And for the Heat, getting Kevin Love, they kind of stood pat at the trade deadline, didn't make any trades. It's kind of surprising considering their roster and Kyle Lowry not really being content there. So they needed to make a move in the buyout market, and they did so with Kevin Love. The Heat bench has been pretty bad. I think Orlando Robinson and some Boye, I can't really pronounce his name, is like their bench pieces there. They're both like two-way contracts. So it's been kind of hard for that Heat team. But Kevin Love will definitely provide that spark off the bench that they need behind Bam Adebayo. And then for Westbrook, like you said, Gray, him being the replacement for Reggie Jackson, kind of ironic considering Reggie Jackson was kind of key as the replacement for Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. That obviously didn't work out with Reggie Jackson being traded to Detroit because they didn't really get along. And also, like you said, Russell Westbrook having experience playing with Paul George in that year they played together, Paul George having MVP level season. Yeah, I think that fits can be really well. It's probably one of the only teams where Russell Westbrook can probably be the primary ball handler and have success there with PG and Kawhi Leonard being able to kind of just stand to the side and take a jump shots and kind of work around Russell Westbrook. But if the Russell Westbrook experiment's going to work with the Clippers, he's going to have to be efficient and facilitate much better than what he did for the Lakers this season.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, the fourth story we have today is college football executives are considering four changes to shorten games. The proposals include prohibiting consecutive timeouts, no longer extending a first or third quarter for an untimed down if the quarter ends on a defensive penalty. The clock will continue to run after a offense gains a first down, except inside of 2 minutes and a half. And the clock will continue to run after an incomplete pass once the ball is spotted for a play. Do you like any of these proposed rule changes?
I like the consecutive timeouts. I like that specifically for watching games on TV. I hate when there's back-to-back commercials or whatever, like or one play in between two commercials. It's like, all right, come on, can we just play the game? Can we just play ball? The last two proposals here, though, the clock will run after an offense gains a first down. Obviously, that is a thing in the NFL. But in college, if an offense gains a first down and does not go out of bounds, the clock is stopped until the ball is spotted. I like that rule. I don't think that should change. But the last one, the clock will continue to run after an incomplete pass once the ball is spotted. I think that would completely rule out spiking the ball. That would completely rule out that would change the game, not just towards the end of the game, but that would change the game in general.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you there. I think the last one where the clock will continue to run after incomplete pass is just not gonna be feasible
That's
for
ridiculous,
any
yeah.
stretch of the game. Coaches won't like it. Administrations won't really like it. But the other three, I think are really good. Prohibiting consecutive timeouts is gonna be really important. Like you said, Gray, the coming into a game, watching one play, and then going right back to commercial, it is just atrocious to watch. And it's just like, why am I even here half the
Yeah.
time? And then the clock continued to run after offensive gains a first down. Like you said, Gray, the NFL does that. I think they need to implement it with college. I don't really understand when it gains a first down, the clock stops. And they're going to say inside 2 minutes, it's going to stop, and they're going to follow those rules that they had in the past. So I think that's really going to work out there. But I think some of these rules are going to work and some of them are not.
Yeah.
All right, Gray, what do you got for college basketball from the past week?
Again, a hectic week in the state of Alabama. Two tales of two different games for each of the two teams, for Auburn and for Alabama. But let's start for Alabama. The first game, the midweek game on Tuesday night, I believe it was Tuesday night, they played against Tennessee in Knoxville, a Tennessee team who has struggled recently. But outside this Alabama game, they've struggled. And against Alabama, I think Tennessee played really well without two of their starters, including Josiah Jordan-James, who has been the reason that they've won games down the stretch here in SEC play. But for Tennessee, Santiago Vescovi, 15 points, Zakai Ziegler, 15 points. If you get 30 points out of your two starting guards, you're going to be successful. You're going to be successful. If you ask Auburn, if we get 15 points out of our starting guards or each, if we get 30 points total from our backcourt, we're going to win. And that's the case for Tennessee in this game. And for Alabama, the turnover struggles were just unbelievable. 19 turnovers, 6 for Javon Quinterly off the bench. It played pretty well, especially at times. It stayed in this game, even though it felt like Tennessee had control of it. Coming off the bench, Neomari Burnett continues to be a really good outside shooter, went 3 of 4 at 11 points. Brandon Miller had 15 points and 10 rebounds. What did you see from Alabama this game that could show some signs of troubles in the turnover category?
Yeah, look at the Alabama we saw earlier in the year, first couple of weeks. Just turnovers were just, like you said, great killer. And Javon Quinterly being the leader in that, having 6 of them and only scoring 3 points, it was just hard to watch him dribble the ball around the court. He's supposed to be the leader of the second unit, and he has not played like it recently.
Yeah,
there was a stretch earlier in the season where it looked like he was back to his normal self, but now he's just like reverted back to what we saw at the beginning of the season. But the only offense Alabama really had in this game was Jaden Bradley driving to the basket and drawing fouls. Nobody else really wanted to step up. Mark Sears was very timid to do anything. Brandon Miller could not get anything going, even though he scored 15 points. And Noah Clowney, he just looked like he was in a slump. He looked lost. He just looked demoralized. And Damari Burnett off the bench, he had to be more aggressive. He's like the only person that actually shoot the ball accurately this game, and he really wasn't. And Nick Pringle, he definitely needed to play more for Alabama. When Clowney came in at center and played that primary position, he just kept getting bodied and thrown around like a rag doll. It just felt like he didn't provide the defense that they needed. I mean, the big guy, Plavchik, was just bodying him in the paint, backing him down, and just throwing hook shot after hook shot up. And it just felt that Noah Clowney just can't play that position at this current moment. He's not strong enough. He's not really tall enough. He has a length, but it's just not there yet. If Alabama's going to make a run in this tournament, they're going to have to start Nick Pringle at center because he's obviously the most aggressive player at that position. And then, like you said, Gray, Tennessee's defense was absolutely crazy. I mean, it's going to win them games. It might win them tournament games, might win them the championship. But their offense leaves something to desire. We saw in this game, only scoring 68 points. And you definitely saw it in the Auburn game earlier this season where they just looked abysmal. So the Tennessee team, if they can get the offense figured out, are going to be scary.
Yeah, speaking on Tennessee, they're very confusing to me as well, because just like you mentioned, their offensive struggles are continuing. Even when they win games, even though they won this game big against Alabama, which was a huge win against the number one team at home, like that's a big statement win, especially after getting beat on a buzzer beater at Vanderbilt and by a buzzer beater against Missouri. So it's like but this Tennessee team also, as like Auburn and Alabama, was a tale of two different teams this week. You know, they beat Alabama at home, and then they go to Kentucky and just don't look like they belong on the same floor. What does Tennessee need to do to get back on track? Because their defense is outstanding, one of the best defenses in all of college basketball. But their offense is so inconsistent, a lot like a lot of other offenses. But their defense is going to help them win games. What do they need to do to get more consistent on the defense or on the offensive end?
I think they're going to have to just hire Jordan James back. He is the engine that keeps them going. And with him out, they really just lack that guy. Vescovy is great and Ziegler's great, but, you know, they have their shooting slumps. They really didn't shoot efficiently in the Alabama game either. I mean, Ziegler was 4 for 11 and Vescovy was 4 for 10. So that obviously something to be desired. But they just need Josiah Jordan James back if they're going to make this run.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to talk about the Alabama versus Georgia game. Again, completely tale of two different games for Alabama, losing to Tennessee on the road and then coming home. And they did to Georgia what exactly what they did at Vanderbilt at home earlier in the year, a few weeks ago. It was just a barrage. And Alabama just didn't miss from basically anywhere. The final score was 108 to 59. And, you know, that's a little closer than it looked like it was. Brandon Miller, 21 points, led all scorers. He was fantastic with 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3. Noah Clowney had 12 points. Mark Sears had 17 points. And then off the bench, Nick Pringle had 19 points and 12 rebounds. Rylan Griffin had 13 points. And you mentioned when you talked about this with the Tennessee game, Alex, the Nick Pringle, Charles Bediako, Noah Clowney, that position has gotten really, really weird for Alabama the past few weeks. But Nick Pringle has really, really stepped it up. As I don't think Noah Clowney stepped up as much as he did earlier in the year. because Noah Clowney was one of the best players on Alabama early this year. But Nick Pringle has really, really stepped it up, especially in the physical aspect of the game. He went 9 of 12 in this game from the field, had 12 rebounds, 19 points. He was dominant on the inside coming off the bench. Again, reiterating what you said about the Georgia game, I think he needs to find his way into the starting lineup. What did you think about his performance in this game?
I mean, he looked unstoppable. Nick Pringle really shined. The dunks and alley-oops were fun to watch. One of the dunks, I thought he was just going to destroy the rim, but he missed it. But he's really, yeah. I think he's earned that starting role the way he's been playing these past few games with Tennessee and Georgia. Charles Badiakhe has been hampered with an injury, so that's obviously something to look out for with Nick Pringle playing more. But the way he guards the paint and defends it, he just seems to have much more strength than Noah Clowney and Charles Badiakhe provide. The only reason I could think he doesn't play more is just his lack of shooting at the three and the free throw. He shot 1 for 5 from the free throw line this game and didn't attempt a three-pointer. So that's really the only reason I can think he just doesn't play as much as guys like Noah Clowney, who obviously spreads the floor very well, can shoot that three efficiently. Yeah. But looking at this game as a whole, I mean, Georgia did not stand a chance. They were absolutely throttled from start to finish. I mean, I don't even know where they were at. They looked like Vanderbilt earlier this season, like you said, Gray. I mean, Bama's big three was very efficient with Clowney, Mark Sears, and Brandon Miller all scoring double digits. And like you also mentioned, they shot Bama shot 47.1% from the three. I mean, if you only count their made threes, they scored 48 points. Georgia scored 59. So that's pretty amazing there. That's just to look at that and be astounded by what Bama does on that three-point line. But something to look at that's kind of a downside is Javon Quinterly still had three turnovers, which led the team. He's kind of, like I said, he's reverting back to that old self. And if he might get benched because Alabama has the flexibility to not play him at all. I mean, they have the depth. They have Ryland Griffin. They have Burnett. They have Dom Welch. I mean, they really don't need him to play if he's going to continue to throw these turnovers and cost possessions.
Yeah, 100%. If Quinterly doesn't fix the problems that he had this week where he had 9 turnovers and 6 points in these two games, problems are going to begin to become that. And the flexibility that Nate Oates has this year that he didn't necessarily have last year when it was basically just Shackelford, Davidson, and Quinterly, is now he has Jaden Bradley as Mark Sears. He has Ryland Griffin, who's playing his tail off. Near Marty Burnett has played better and better and better, even though he went 0 for 3 in this game from 3. So he Nate Oates has the flexibility at the guard position, at the ball handling position, to not need Javon Quinterly, which I think that's a move that could be coming in the future. But another thing looking at this game, and if I look at the stat sheet, Alabama shot 63% from the free throw line, which a lot of that is Noah Pringle. He went 1 of 5. There wasn't a lot of misses outside of that, and Jaden Bradley went 0 of 2. But that's not good. You want to see that number improve, especially when you get a turnover play for Alabama. You start playing teams who shoot more free throws than you. You need to shoot a better percentage. But for Georgia, 13 of 30, 43% from the free throw line. Moncrief went 0 of 7. I mean, there is problems on that Georgia team. Mike White, obviously, the transfer from Florida to Georgia was so weird. I think that's the biggest maybe downgrade, maybe lateral move I've ever seen as a coach do, especially in conference. Like that was so weird, that whole move. And he has had success in certain games this season. But, man, this – again, you just like you mentioned, Alex – there's no, they didn't belong on the same floor or in the same state as Alabama in this game.
No, definitely not. And I don't think Mike White's the guy there. I think that was more of just like a band-aid for this program that's been atrocious for years and years. The bright spot of that program was when they had Anthony Edwards there for a season. They just can't attract high-level recruits like they can from football. I don't think Mike White lasts more than 3 seasons here with Georgia. They really just need to get better recruits, get better coaching. Mm-hmm. I mean, this program is just a dumpster fire.
It's largely, in fact, due to because Georgia high school basketball is one of the best in the country. It doesn't compare to like maybe California or something like that, but Georgia high school basketball has produced some of the best basketball players in history. And if you look at the past 5 years, the team that has dominated the state of Georgia in recruiting is Auburn and Bruce Pearl. And, I mean, they've gotten the past five Mr. Georgia State basketball players. I mean, JT Thor, Walker Kessler, Jabari Smith, Sharif Cooper, Isaac Okoro. You can't let that happen. Chuma Okeke, you can't let that happen. You can't let them go. You can't let them go away from Georgia. If you're somebody like Mike White and that Georgia program, and that's something they've got to fix very, very soon if they want to get back in this race. Because right now, especially the way Alabama's playing, the way Nate Oates is looking, Tennessee is going to be there. Auburn's going to be there. Florida, I think, is on the up and coming with Todd Golden. There are teams that are on the up and coming when Georgia is on the down float. So they've got some problems to fix.
Most definitely.
So moving on to talk about Auburn. Again, we're going to say it again. The tale of two different games completely. Auburn looked absolutely fantastic against Missouri at home. This was a definite must win for the Tigers on Valentine's Day. 89-56 was the final score. And again, I don't think it was that close. It was 30-6 out of the jump for Auburn. Dominating performances from Jani Broome, 20-10, went 8-13 from the field. Alan Flanagan had 16 points, went 6-7 from the field. Wendell Green only had 5 points in this game, but he had 9 assists and 0 turnovers. He was orchestrating. I mean, if you would have told me Wendell Green went 0-4 in this game, I'd have been like, oh, you know, we may lose it, but then you win by 33. So it showed his facilitating ability. It showed the depth. It showed Auburn's depth, because we've been begging and begging and begging for bench production from Auburn. Somebody to come off the bench, especially since Alan Flanagan got busted into the starting lineup. So we need somebody to come off the bench and score, especially from the three-point line. And looky there. Katie Johnson, 4 of 6 from three, had 15 points. Leor Berman, 2 of 2 from three, had 8 points. Dylan Carwell had 8 points and 10 rebounds off the bench, along with 3 blocks. You finally saw a complete game for Auburn on the offensive end, on the defensive end, on the bench. Shooting-wise, shot 50% from three, shot 80% from the free throw line, and it all worked against a very good Missouri team.
Yeah, this is a huge bounce-back win for Auburn. I definitely thought it was going to be a much closer game down to the wire, like their game against Vanderbilt was later in the week. Their offense was great. Their defense was great. They were definitely elite level, maybe even tournament-winning caliber at this point against Missouri. Their bench, like you said, Gray, really stepped it up with all three of those guys, like you mentioned, playing really well. And you look at a guy like Jani Broome having 20-10. It's really good to see after that struggle he had against Alabama and Charles Bediako that Saturday prior. So this Auburn team, you know, they had a great game against Missouri, but then you go against Vanderbilt, and it's just a terrible, terrible scene.
It's completely different, and I don't understand the inconsistencies of all college basketball teams, especially on the offensive end this year. I mean, it's gotten a little weird because it's everybody. And there's only a few teams that have certain players that are always on. Obviously, I'm talking about Brandon Miller for Alabama, even though we've seen him, you know, not shoot the ball well, but he still played well, and Alabama still played well. I'm thinking Zach Edey at Purdue, even though we've seen them not play well, especially offensively, they're probably the most consistent. And then you look at Kansas with Jalen Wilson and Grady Dick. You maybe look at Houston with Jamal Shedd. I have no idea. But the inconsistencies for Auburn are out of control. Wendell Green against Vandy and a loss. 67-65, you lose on a buzzer beater, obviously a heartbreaker. Vanderbilt has won now 5 straight in the SEC, including 2 buzzer beater wins against Auburn and Tennessee at home, which are absolutely huge. But for Auburn, Wendell Green, 2 of 14 from the field, has 5 points. From the backcourt, from the Auburn starting backcourt, you got 5 points and went 0 for 4 from 3. You also had 4 turnovers. Off the bench in the backcourt, and I'm not counting Leroy Berman in this. Leroy Berman, I believe, is more of a 3. He plays more of a 3 role because he plays a lot with Trey Donaldson and KD Johnson. So if I'm not counting Leroy Berman, who had 8 points in this game, KD Johnson had 6 points, including the 3 to tie the game at 65, and Trey Donaldson had 0. And if you combine all that, you combine every backcourt player, which I'm talking Wendell, Zepp, KD, and Trey. You got 11 points. You got four turnovers. And you've got 1 3-pointer made. No matter how well Jahni Broome and Jalen Williams played in this game, which both had outstanding games, 20 points for Jahni, 17 for Jalen. That's the kind of production you really want to see from those two. But no matter what, you're not going to win, especially on the road, especially against a really hot team like Vanderbilt, if you get 11 points from your entire backcourt. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to work like that.
No, definitely not. It just comes back to the thing. Auburn can't close games week in and week out. It's just proven again and again. You know, they just can't have that guy, the go-to guy that knocks in that clutch three-pointer, even though Katie Johnson kind of did this game. But, you know, that's really not expected from Katie Johnson when you have Wendell Green Jr. and Jalen Williams playing. But, you know, the bench for Auburn gave them a lift that they needed, but the starters just really didn't play well, like you said, Gray. And, you know, I looked on Twitter after the game. There were fans complaining about the free throw differential. But coming into this game, Vandy was one of the top teams when drawing fouls and going to the free throw line. And Auburn really loves to foul. So it was a match made in heaven. And Leon Robbins, the center for Vanderbilt, really profited, shooting 20 free throws, making 17 of them. Really was a difference in the game there. Completely. But at the end of the game, you have the point guard for Vanderbilt. What's his name? Mahan?
Yeah, Mahan, Majan, I don't know.
Yeah, driving to the basket, and it was like the Red Sea just parted, and there was just a wide-open lane. Dylan Carwell is nowhere to be seen. Jalen Williams is nowhere to be seen. I mean, it was just like there was nobody there. I don't know what Auburn needs to do to fix it, but they just cannot close out games.
Yeah, you're 100% right. They just can't find the right thing to happen to them at the right time. And that's not coming from the officials. Like the fact that we shot 10 free throws and the fact that Leon Robbins shot 20 is a bit of an issue, but I don't think that's on the officials. Just like you said, Alex, I think that's a lot on the, you know, the way the game went, you know, the way Jahni Broome was guarding Liam Robbins, which he was guarding him really well. Robbins went 3 of 10, which is really, really bad, but he was fouling him. I think Broome outplayed him in this game, even though Robbins had 4 more points, 6 more rebounds, and won the game. But you just cannot – on the last possession, I don't know why Broome wasn't in the game. Why was Carwell in the game? You know, Bruce Pearl was asked about that in his press conference. He said, we wanted Dylan out there for length purposes. Let me remind you that Jahni Broome was second in the country last year in blocks behind Walker Kessler. I don't understand what's going through the mind there. I don't get it. Obviously, this one's a tough loss. I think Auburn is – due to the metrics, I mean, they're top 20 in RPI, they're top 30 in net ranking. I think due to those metrics and the Northwestern win looking absolutely incredible now, you are safe in the tournament. But I really, really do think you have to win 2 of your last 4 here. You got Ole Miss and Kentucky, Alabama and Tennessee. If you can win 2 games there, I think that's what they need to do.
Yeah, the problem with Auburn in the tournament, though, is they're kind of on that fringe 8 and 9 line. And depending on wherever they are and they win that game, they're going to have to face a 1 seed. So their tournament hopes are really kind of looking dire right now.
That's right. Yep, that's right. So the Division I Men's Basketball Selection Committee released their top 16 seeds as of right now this past week. The top 16 teams were number 1, Alabama, followed by Houston, Purdue, and Kansas. That would be the 1 seeds. The 2 seeds were Texas, Arizona, Baylor, UCLA. The 3 seeds were Tennessee, Virginia, Iowa State, and Kansas State. And then the 4 seeds were Indiana, Marquette, Gonzaga, and Xavier. Alex, is there a certain team in here that you may think is too high or too low? Anything that you got?
I think they kind of ranked them well. But 2 teams to look out for in the tournament are going to be UCLA and Xavier. I think those are really sneaky teams, with UCLA playing the way they are and having the veteran leadership of Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell. And then for Xavier, their backcourt and frontcourt are both really, really well, really good, with their point guard Soli Boom playing very well, being one of the finalists for the Point Guard of the Year award. But one team that's not on this list that I wouldn't be surprised made a Final Four would be NC State. They have probably the second best backcourt in the league behind Baylor. Tre'Quavion Smith, being second in the ACC in points per game, and then Jarkel Joyner, who put on a show against North Carolina earlier last week. And then they had their center, DJ Burns, who shoots 56.8% from the field, which is fourth in the ACC. So that's really a team to look out for, because we've seen in past tournaments, guard play wins them usually, and NC State really has one of the best in the league.
Absolutely. And for that reason, for that exact reason, I want to point out that Baylor is one of the scariest teams for me. I think their game against Kansas, which was the tale of two different halves, in that game, I think that was Baylor's game in the first half, Kansas' game in the second half. But I really want really watch out for Baylor. Obviously, Keontae George and Adam Flagler, that's a really, really good backcourt. And guard play is really, really important in the tournament and in March.
Well, all right. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.